guys ready? We're going to get started. Welcome, everybody. We don't want to wait too long. We'll get started. Thank you all for coming. We are going to start by having the presentation of the colors. And we'll recognize our Girl Scout troop, our local troop here, also going to be standing near the colors and accompanying our police department tonight. So we'll do the colors first. Then we'll proceed to do the swearing in of our newly elected officials. And then we'll relax and have some food and visit for a few minutes before we start our council meeting. Thank you. We'll first have Mayor Horrocks come forward, and all the swearing in will be done tonight by our city recorder, Wendy Page.
How about that? And I'm going to give you a microphone. Okay, Mayor, raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
Brian Horrocks.
Having been appointed to the office of mayor.
Appointed to the office of mayor.
Do solemnly swear. That I will support, obey, and defend. The Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of Utah. And that I will discharge the duties of my office. With fidelity. You are officially sworn in,
Thank
Mayor.
You.
I'll have you come sign. Come and sign, and then we can do pictures, maybe with your certificate. Sign one for me, and I'll sign one for you. There.
We're going in alphabetical order, so we'll do Heidi Smoot next. And Alisa, you've probably been last all your life. Sorry. Since you married Van Langeveld. Okay. Sorry. JJ's been last.
Do you want to get pictures with me?
Do we want
to get pictures individually or all together when we're done?
I think we should swear everyone in, and then we can do both.
Thank you. Missed that.
Oh, she has a mic for you.
Okay. Okay, Heidi Smoot, please raise your right hand and repeat after me.
I,
state your name.
Heidi Smoot.
Having been elected to the office.
Having been elected to the office.
Of City Council.
Of City Council.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support, obey, and defend.
That I will support, obey, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And that I will discharge these duties.
And that I will discharge these duties.
With fidelity.
With fidelity.
Wonderful. Come and sign your official. I'm going to actually get you a new one, so just sign this one.
Okay.
Because I put point in, and I should have said elected. But hang on to it for a minute.
Okay.
All right. Now we have Elisa Van Langfeld.
And I know we don't usually do this, but I've asked my family to come stand with me, if they will.
Okay.
And also my Girl Scouts. Mm-hmm.
Yay. All right, please raise your right hand and repeat after me. We'll let them get situated first. You good? All right. I, state your name.
I, Elisa Van Langeveld.
Having been elected to.
Having been elected to.
The office of City Council.
The office of City Council.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support, obey, and defend.
That I will support, obey, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
Awesome. Come and sign your.
Thank you, Wendy. Thank you, everyone, for coming out. This is just a little capsule of what makes our country great, is representative government. We get a chance to elect officials and get rid of them if they don't do a good job. Wendy, I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to ask a question. I don't know the answer. Wendy's our city recorder. Her job is to make sure I don't ever go to jail. And so far, she's doing a great job. How come I'm appointed?
You're not. Do you want to do it again?
No, I just was wondering. Well, it says on my certificate.
I know, because I didn't switch that verbiage. Almost everyone else that we prepare certificates for. So you want to say it again?
Well,
I think you
what
should.
What does Todd think?
I think you should do it again.
Okay. Do it again? Is that?
It's awesome that I have a deputy recorder that said, I think it's supposed to say elected to. And I was like, oh, yes, it should.
Okay.
So I will fix them for everyone.
It was my chance, a power grab, just to be appointed.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, let's.
So, Mayor, let's make you an elected official. Are you ready for this? Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, state your name.
I, Brian Horrocks.
Having been elected to.
Having been elected to.
The office of mayor.
The office of mayor.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support, obey, and defend.
That I will support, obey, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
Awesome. I know you will. Thanks.
So you can give that to me unless you want to hold it up for the picture, but we'll get you one.
Okay.
Before the end of the night.
All right.
That's what I'm going to do while you guys are eating.
Let's eat. Let's take some pictures.
You want to take pictures last night?
Okay. Let's start with my family come up. Anyone that wants to be in the picture?
I'll give you your face.
Okay.
No, but zoom in that close.
And while they're doing pictures, I'm just going to say there's food on both sides of the tables. Water will be at the back of the room shortly. And there's different things on either side, so feel free to look around and, yeah. It's just...
Yeah. Can we get the council to come up? We'll start our work session. We'd like to welcome everyone to our work session of our City Council meeting for January 6, 2026. And we're pleased to have our elected legislative representatives here tonight, Senator Todd Weiler and Representative Melissa Ballard. And we'll turn the time over to them to give us a little spiel, and then we'll pepper you with really tough questions.
Thank you so much for having us. It's great to see your council unified and new members elected and in your chairs. I am Melissa Garf Ballard. I've been in the House of Representatives, was elected back in 2018. And so I've served in a variety of capacities in legislative committee chairs and committees through and advisory boards and almost every committee, I think, at this point. But in looking to 2026, and we have an upcoming in 2 weeks, our legislative session, one thing that I'm really proud of that I will be continuing this year is I always work on something for government efficiencies. Really, it's what we are responsible for, where tax dollars go. We're responsible for government agencies. And helping our government agencies be more accountable, transparent, is something that I've taken very seriously every single year. In fact, just about 2 months ago, the governor, I was surprised, they asked me to come and speak to this award thing, and it was his very first GRIT award, and they gave me the first GRIT award because it was modeled after legislation that I sponsored, encouraging our state employees to be innovative, be forward-thinking, planning, transparent. And so that GRIT award stands for Government Resilience, Innovation, and Transparency. And so this year, I actually have two bills associated with that. One of them has to do with our federal agencies, the federal programs that help those in financial need. There's actually 27 federal programs, everything from breakfast at the schools to lunch or CHIP for insurance or SNAP food benefits. There's 27. And so having the state of Utah administer all of those has not been efficient, to say the least. There was an audit done a couple years ago, so I'm following up with that and really putting more accountability into how we're doing that. And that relates to another bill that I'll be running that actually simplifies our tax code. back in 1951, head of household was established after World War II. And so one of the problems we have in our state and also nationally is two adults at the same home residing there, but one of them claiming head of household status for their taxes and the other claiming all the welfare benefits. And so this aligns all of that, but also encourages joint filers if they are joint filers. So, for example, if somebody earns $80,000 and the spouse is staying at home with the kids, they would both file jointly and at $40,000 each. So, and also it takes our state funds away from the earned income tax credit, which is a federal tax credit, and puts state dollars into our taxpayer tax credit. And what does that mean? That means that Utah is not reliant on what is going on in the federal government for tax benefits or not. As we've seen, it fluctuates over the years. And so this way, we really have more a simpler tax code, but Utah can be in control of what we do for benefits for in any space. So that really simplifies our tax code a lot and also helps to reduce fraudulent submissions. I will be running some other bills, but I think those are two really good ones that I wanted to highlight that I'm excited about. I always do things in the correctional space for prisons for reentry to make that more aligned so that we can reduce recidivism. And I've been doing some things recently regarding homeless. I know that that's an issue that we have here in North Salt Lake. So I've worked with more recently with members of the board who are supposed to be overseeing what this homeless camp is supposed to be. And so I think my number one thing that I've been emphasizing is I do not want a bus stop at this homeless shelter. Right now, already 50% of the homeless in Utah are not even from Utah. So if it's an open door, it just invites more bus stops. In 2020, for example, Vegas was always bringing up, dropping off busloads of homeless and saying Utah will take care of you. I also think the accountability for those who are receiving services so that they don't keep going back into jail, keep going back into prison, really, I think the services are what we need to have some accountability for. And I think that's what I've heard that I'm most encouraged with those receiving the services, that there is not just more given, but really trying to evaluate the accountability of where this individual needs the most support. So that's a little bit, I think, looking into the 2026 session, and I always appreciate working with Todd Weiler, who represents North Salt Lake, as well as other cities. I represent North Salt Lake, Bountiful, and Woods Cross, which, you know, you go across Bountiful or Redwood Road, I get almost all of them. So, but I'm happy to be here, and Todd, I'm going to let you give your little summary.
Thank you. I guess I need to turn this on. Thank you very much. Watching some of you get sworn in was reminiscent for me. I was elected to the Woods Cross City Council in 1999 and was not a very good council member. So I think if I went back now with what I've learned in the last 26 years, I'd be better. But I kind of ran against the city, and it was a little bit of a thorn in the city manager's side for my first 2 years. I chilled out a little bit after that. And when the mayor asked if he needed to be sworn in again, and he said we should ask Todd, I now realize he meant Todd Godfrey, but I was quick to respond because I was also a city attorney back in a prior life for Bluffdale City, and that was when the mayor was suing the city council, and the city council was countersuing the mayor. So that was a really fun chapter in my life. So congratulations to all of you, and I extend this off for every year, and Elisa has done it, our council member Van Langenfeld, but I'd love to have any of you come and sit with me on the Senate floor. The session starts 2 weeks from today, and for the first couple weeks of the session, we're always on the floor, and the House and the Senate are on the floor at the same time, but we're always on the floor from 11 to 12 every day, And then that expands to 10 to 12 and 2 to 4. But, you know, and then by the last week of the session, we're on the floor sometimes 12 or 15 hours a day. But I think it's fun to come. I used to do that before I was in the legislature. I'd go and beg my legislator to let me sit on the floor with him and just kind of watch what's going on. It's kind of fun. A little different than your meetings. Not better or worse, but just different. So as a Senate majority caucus, we've met, and our priorities for this session, let me just tell you, as a caucus, we want to focus on building a future grid for our energy needs. Energy powers our homes, innovation, and defense. Utah is building a grid that secures America's future. The next industrial revolution starts here. And that's, I think, especially a reference to AI or artificial intelligence. We want to focus on what's invented here is exported everywhere, from air taxis to biotech, next generation AI, to critical minerals. Utah's building what the world needs. We don't reinterpret, we uphold. The Constitution endures because it works. The rule of law and separation of powers protect liberty and must never be compromised. Water shapes our future. Fresh water fuels our communities, farms, and future, investing in smart infrastructure and strategic conservation to secure every drop. And the fifth focus for the Senate Majority Caucus this session is protecting freedom in a connected world. Innovation, accountability, freedom, and safety, and progress principles go hand in hand, preventing foreign adversaries from shaping America's discourse. Digital freedom must never become digital manipulation, and lead with secure, transparent, and verified safeguards to ensure only Americans decide our elections. I personally believe that although our elections are not perfect, they're about as good as anywhere in the world here in Utah. But there are a lot of members of our public who are concerned about election integrity, and so we want to alleviate those concerns as much as possible. So with that, I'd be happy to field any questions. Commissioner Van Langenveld gave me a good grilling last time, so I'm prepared. So
questions?
Council member, not commissioner member, sorry, commissioner, but close. I was close.
I'm happy to start, and I'll try not
sure.
to make it a grilling.
Oh, you? No, I'm a lawyer. I can take it. So,
no, you might. I don't know that this is on your radar yet or not. I have talked to a little bit of the majority in the Senate leadership, but the last year's SB 44. Is a WUI, and we're going to be actually talking about some of the WUI code that we just adopted. But the bill is concerning to me because it's financially punitive to residents. I think we all worry about fire safety, especially after seeing the Palisades and, of course, Lahaina. It's always in the back of our minds, especially for residents that live up on the benches. However, my understanding of this bill is problematic in the fact that it's forming yet another government agency, unelected, but the agency has the ability to tax and fee and fine. So my understanding of the bill is that code is required to be adopted by cities. We were given a deadline of the end of the year as cities across the state to be in compliance with the bill. And in that code, there is a lot of really tight minutia that's retroactive on what property owners have to do with their property, i.e. trees have to be below the roof line, shrubs and plants have to be 10 feet away from the house. I did a quick drive around my neighborhood. Not one house was in compliance with that code, and not by a long shot. So it would be tens of thousands of dollars of landscaping to become compliant. And if those homes are not in compliance, then it looks like around a $200 yearly fee that will be imposed by the state through the county. I find that problematic. It feels like fee and fine without representation or recourse, and it's punitive retroactively.
You said SB 44, but that was a licensing bill. Do you know the actual number?
Oh, 48. Number? I'm 48. Sorry, 48. Okay. Thank you.
HB 48, okay.
Right.
It was the wildlife urban
yes,
interface
the
modifications.
Yes, the WUI urban, yeah. So I just wanted to bring it up to at least maybe put it on your radar tonight. I'm hoping it's an unfunded bill, and it felt very rudimentary. I think my other big concern with the bill that we've seen in other states is once properties get earmarked as being high risk for fire, then fire insurance companies pull from those states, and then those homes can no longer be covered. And we've seen that happen in several other states. So really, as cities and as a state, we're doing the work for the insurance companies by specifically, right now, national insurance companies are fairly blind to where Eaglewood Loop would be in North Salt Lake. They don't know that. But after we've done the work of mapping out resident by resident who is high risk, well, voila, we just gave them a code of everywhere they can raise premiums and potentially drop fire insurance. So that's a concern that I have that's more on the city level. I think the only other concern that I would love to put on the radar is just the PIDs, like the point. I feel like it can become taxation without representation. So whenever there's a body that's created that can tax people, but it's not an elected body, then you can't unelect them. You can't kick them out if you don't agree with the taxation. And we're seeing more and more of those pop up in Utah. And they can impose high taxes that go for decades, like the point. And there's nothing that the residents and citizens have as recourse because they aren't administered by elected officials. So that would just be another. There's probably going to be several bills that address that, but just that's a concern of mine also.
Maybe I'll start. I'll address the last one first. A PID, P-I-D, is a political investment district. Mm-hmm. And so it was created a few years ago, not many years ago, for an entity to come in and do kind of some infrastructure investment. And the concept was this will allow us to build in areas that we otherwise would not be able to afford to have the homes or the amenities. And you're right. I totally agree. The problem is that the developer does not have to incur any of the costs or settle it when they finish that development. And so basically it's a glorified HOA for decades that whoever is in the commercial or residential area that's been developed, they have to pay the interest and the money that was due to fund putting that together. So when I do know that there are some bills that are there to address that, because you talk about the cost of living. HOAs are a big one. If I had my choice, I would say if there's HOAs that want to be incorporated into cities, I would encourage you to do so. Even if their roads are smaller, buses get through there, and they still pay city and county taxes for the roads to be plowed, and yet they still have to pay separate for somebody else. They're not really street managers. So, but it just increases the cost of living exponentially. And so, but the PID is a very specific entity that I think was a great idea, but that's the good thing about a legislature is we come back every year and evaluate what's not working so well. So I look forward to having some changes to the PIDs so that residents don't have a 30, 40 year interest fee that they're just trying to pay for the development of that area.
Yeah, so for anybody listening, WUI is the Wildlife Urban Interface, in case anybody didn't know. I will say that bill kind of snuck up on me, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the same bill that you had some hikers being forced to buy fishing licenses to hike in certain areas, and we fixed part of that problem. I think you'll see some efforts this session to scale some of that back. I wasn't aware until you said it about the tree height, and that is one that kind of slipped through at the end of the session that I think deserved more scrutiny. In terms of PIDs, or public infrastructure units, those are created by the city, the county, or another political subdivision. And I know that there's kind of been some educational movements in our community against PIDs, but I'll tell you, I'm not here advocating for PIDs, but if you don't have a PID, you could have a specific public improvement, which they're only for public improvements. You can't use them for private buildings. So utilities, sewer lines, water, roads, similar public facilities. If we were to outlaw PIDs in certain instances, instead of making the neighborhoods that directly benefited from those utilities, you would have to spread the cost across your entire city. So now you're forcing homeowners who don't benefit from those public improvements to pay for them. And so I would just say maybe PIDs aren't the best thing in the world, but if we ban them, it might be a worse result. So you just be careful what you hope for.
I'll add one thing to that. I believe that there's another option. It's like a business investment district. I can't remember what the first word is. But it's where it's the same thing, but the developer is required to complete all of the costs and shore that up before they leave a project, which is not what the PIDs do. So I think that could use maybe the balance between the two. We'll see where it goes.
And I share your concerns about unelected bodies imposing taxes. I'll just remind you, we have, you know, and you're right, we have those, and we don't necessarily want to grow those. But I think the Mosquito Abatement Board is one example, and I could give probably 20 others. None of us elected those people. But thank goodness that they're trying to, you know, stem the tide of the West Nile virus and things. And so it's not all bad, but I get your point, and I agree with you.
Well,
so.
And they've... Speaking for the Mosquito Abatement Board, it's mostly elected people now.
Yeah, but they're not elected to be on that board. They're elected to be on something else. But you're right. Yeah.
And I think the bottom line of the concern here is just taxation without representation. And just we are all seeing the cost of living exponentially rise. So my concern with those are just we are getting fee and tax exhausted, especially here in Utah. And so anytime we create a new agency that can impose fines, fees, or taxes, especially if the residents don't have recourse, then at what point do you not own your property or get taxed out of your property?
I will tell you, long before our 10 years, I think it was in the 80s, the legislature enacted the requirement to hold, what do they call them, the hearings for tax increases. There's a name for those.
Truth and taxation.
Truth and taxation. And it forced a lot of cities, were afraid of that. And it's interesting because in the 70s and 80s, if a city proposed a new tax, there would be a line out of City Hall and around the corner of people speaking against it. Now, it's usually more zoning that people come out for, a la homeless shelters and things like that, and less so. But when I was on the city council, it was very clear to me, our city staff was terrified of holding a truth and taxation hearing. I think that's changed today, 2.5 decades later, but they would often try to raise fees to avoid the tax increase. So you're right. And there's different ways of cities generating revenues, and one is fees and one's a property tax increase. And I often joke to people when I'm talking to them, you know, cities don't sell tacos out the back door to raise money. They raise it from taxes and fees. So I get your point. Maybe you should sell tacos. I would come buy one. So.
Go ahead. Thank you. Question. We know that affordability is one of, if not the biggest concern for residents. And thank you, first of all, for coming here. Very much appreciate that. And you know how sensitive communities are about state overreach. And at the same time, I guess I'm trying to understand, do you feel like, or do you get the sense that the legislature feels like more needs to be done? How are they looking at this question of affordability and how we respond to it collectively, and what are your thoughts on the right role for the state versus local government when we think about collectively how we deal with this vexing problem.
Yeah, and I'll take the lead on this. I think, you know, I think that's been a buzzword for 2025, and now we're in 2026, and a lot of that stems from some of the rapid inflation that we've seen over the past 2 or 3 years. And so I will say this, I haven't heard a lot of discussions at the Capitals, particularly surrounded around affordability, but so the legislature doesn't collect property taxes. That's the cities and the counties for the most part, and the school districts and the school boards. But we do collect state income taxes, and we have voted to cut state income taxes 5 years in a row. And every time we do that, the Salt Lake Tribune publishes an editorial and says, oh, this is stupid. This only saves the average Utah family about $80 a year. Well, you take $80 a year times five, times every year for the rest of your life, and that's what we've done already, and I think there's going to be an effort to do that again this year. So does that solve all your problems? No. Is it a step in the right direction? Absolutely.
I would answer that I don't think it's a gang mentality of we'd better go get the cities and the counties, for sure. I think there's a lot of support from government being at the most local level as possible. I think the overall question that has been pressing legislators in the last 5 years is just the lack of units per families that are trying to find housing. And so I think there's been, well, I know that there's been millions of dollars spent trying to build more. Because what happened in COVID is people didn't travel as much. They started buying second and third homes and instead of traveling. And not that everybody did that, but it has dwindled the option or creating Airbnbs. But we have been very cognizant of the cost of living. And so I think that's why looking at PIDs, looking at even HOAs, is fees on top of just trying to take your salary and pay your mortgage.
So Melissa keeps on mentioning HOAs. So let me just tell you something that I'm proud of. So I don't live in an HOA. That's one thing I'm proud of. But another thing is some HOAs are great and some of them are just absolutely horrible. But we have over 7,000 HOAs in Utah and they operate basically like many cities, as you probably know. But we did create the Office of the HOA Ombudsman last year, and that is up and running. And I know the ombudsman. She's great. So anyone in the sound of my voice that's having a problem with their HOA, you now have a state person, agency, who you can contact and get help from and maybe even mediate a problem with your HOA that won't cost you a penny. So we've had a property rights ombudsman for about 2 decades, and that's usually when the government is taking your property, like for Legacy Highway back in the day or whatever. But now we have an HOA ombudsman, and I think that's a wonderful development. So,
and I think the advantage they have of being part of you versus their HOA trying to manage something is you as a city have a lot of muscle. If somebody comes and puts a new slurry on the road and doesn't do a good job, you've got a lot of muscle, but an HOA doesn't. So I think that's the benefit of people paying their taxes to a city and a county and having a city and county help manage some of those things.
I've got a couple of questions. Let me. First one, and this has nothing to do with my age, but Utah's one of like only 9 states that taxes Social Security. And I keep hearing rumblings like they're going to do away with it maybe. Before I move to Wyoming, do you have something in mind?
Yeah, here? That's a really good question. We have changed that every year with the taxes. Not every year, but yes. Almost. Well, we've changed it a number of times. But really what we looked at was, I think right now the cap is if you earn more than $90,000 a year.
As a couple,
then you pay taxes on that. And so I think that's where we have definitely said anyone below that as a couple who's earning less than that doesn't pay any taxes on it. And so it would be great to get rid of it when we balanced the opportunity to say, let's get rid of Social Security tax for everybody versus do a tax decrease for everybody. There was a lot more benefit for the whole by having lowering the state taxes rather than just those that earn more than $90,000 collectively a year. So we did have those conversations.
Yeah, and Melissa's right. And so I ran a bill in 2016 to completely remove the tax on Social Security. The fiscal note was astronomical, and it didn't even get out of committee. But that's something I've been committed to, and I've been. So what we've done instead is we've chipped away at it for about 4 years now. And so let me just say, $90,000 a year does not make you wealthy. But if you are fully retired and you are living off of Social Security and you still have $90,000 in income, you are not poor. And so what we have done so far, and I think we'll do more in the future, is we've made sure that the people who are in poverty are not, the seniors who are on, they're not paying any taxes on their Social Security. So if you are fully retired and your income is over $90,000 a year, congratulations. You're going to pay some tax, but you're also not going to starve, and you're also not going to lose your housing, you know, probably. So I think we're moving in the right direction. And so what we faced last year was there was a big push to take it completely off. And the argument was, do we need to give Gail Miller and Mitt Romney a tax cut, or should we give everybody a tax cut? And last year we gave everybody a tax cut. Now it was a small one, but instead of just giving some wealthy senior citizens tax cuts, we gave everybody a tax cut. And you know, you can argue whether that was the right thing to do or not, but that's what we did last year. Now what we'll do this year or next year, I can't say.
And okay. Let me add, it's not paying taxes on $90,000. It's anything above that. If I earn $95,000, yeah, you're only paying the tax on $5,000. So it's the incremental difference that the Social Security tax is being looked at, not the entirety.
Sure. Okay.
And I, Mayor, if I could just say this, I hear people pick apart different things about Utah, but you know, if you go to other states, sometimes their property taxes are two or three times higher than ours, but they don't have a sales tax or whatever.
Yeah.
So we approach, at the state of Utah, I'm not speaking as the royal we, but we've always approached taxes as a three-legged stool. You've got sales tax, you've got property tax, and you've got income tax. Now, if you cut off one of those legs, you know, the stool is probably going to fall over, but you're going to have to make the other legs longer to cover for it. And so I hear people say, well, Nevada doesn't have a sales tax, or Alaska doesn't have an income tax. Well, Alaska has oil and Nevada has casinos. But if you look at our overall tax policy versus other states, we rank okay. But it's easy to pick one thing like the tax on Social Security and not compare it to everything else. But I do think we're at a place where I'm not going to lose sleep over someone earning over $90,000 in their retirement having to pay some taxes.
Okay. I was going to ask about the situation in Minnesota, but it sounds like Melissa's already jumping on that. I would hate to think that Utah is in any way irresponsible.
I'm not going to say we're perfect, but I would be shocked if you found 1% of the fraud here in daycares that you have there. We conduct regular audits. Last year, the governor's office started I can't remember what they call their accountability, but are we perfect? Absolutely not. Are you going to find something as widespread as Minnesota? I would be baffled, because I think that we're way ahead of Minnesota in terms of making sure that the money is being properly and accounted for.
And I work closely with our legislative auditors, which oversee government agencies. So every year, as I've run bills with the legislative auditor to hold them more accountable and transparent. And another one this year, I think that's where our value is we have one of the finest, because they literally, when we go to national conferences with other legislators and staff, they are the ones asked to speak to find out how are you making this such a more accountable for government agencies. So I agree. I think we'd be far to find something like what happened in Minnesota.
My final comment, I understand the political nature of the whole homeless shelter. And there was a conscious decision to destroy a neighborhood. Which neighborhood are we going to destroy? And I can't do anything about those poor people on 2200 West.
but we will do whatever's necessary to protect our neighborhoods in our city from this. And I don't know the answer yet, but we will not let them destroy our city or any of our neighborhoods.
So let me first say, I don't know if that's going to get funded. I know it's in the governor's budget, but that's just a proposal. So as I understand it, $75 to $80 million just to build it, and then it's about $30 million a year to maintain it. This is going to be a very tight budget year. I'm going to be surprised if that gets funded this year. So there's the policy, and then there's the finances, and so we'll see what happens.
So if I took off my mayor hat and just said, Joe taxpayer, it's very ill-conceived, the whole concept to me. And I deal with homeless people every day in downtown.
I do too.
And this isn't the answer. But
yeah.
I don't know if I can stop that as a taxpayer, but...
Well. There's a lot of opposition to the policy of that shelter, disassociated with the location, just the policy. And I should probably tell you, and this may make me popular or unpopular in this room, I have been designated by the Senate president to be the Senate homeless liaison. So I've been attending meetings all fall, since September, with the Salt Lake City mayor and Salt Lake County mayor. I also traveled with both of them back to Miami a couple years ago because they're the only major city in the country that's actually reducing their homeless population. Every other city is seeing it explode. And so we've hired consultants from, not the state, but the county, Salt Lake County, has hired consultants from Miami to see what of what they're doing we can be replicating there. And those consultants are very much against the shelter, not because of the location, but because of the policy behind it. So I think there's a lot yet to be determined, and it won't shock me if it comes through the session funded, and it won't shock me if it won't, but there will be a lot of discussions, and I'll be involved in all of them. So I'm very aware of the concerns of the North Salt Lake residents about that location. But there's also the policy and the finances in addition to location. So.
And I'll say I went to that conference and heard the Miami-Dade County speak of what they've done, and their numbers have been reduced, not just some, but almost entirely for their homeless because of the process that they do. We're Utah, we might do things differently, but I think we can learn from that. My voice that I've been trained to share as a resident of North Salt Lake, as an elected official from North Salt Lake, it's two things. One of them, we do not want a bus stop open for anybody who wants to just come by and sleep and be part of the shelter. Number two, whatever borders North Salt Lake, we want to make sure it's more of an enclosed area, not where everybody's coming and going. So I think that is a really important message that we want in North Salt Lake, that we don't want that drop-off close to where our borders are. We could help, and with Senator Wyler being a voice in the Senate, we could help at least put some emphasis on that for our residents to not have the open door at our border, because it's a big space down there.
And I just to eliminate any ambiguity, I learned about that location about when you did in the media. That's not something the legislature voted on. It came from a homeless committee that I'm not on. And so I was just as surprised as the rest of you. And maybe that's an admission I shouldn't make, but that's something that kind of came through an executive branch appointed committee. It wasn't something that the legislature said, hey, let's put it right here. So,
and on another note, we have a brand new Salt Lake police chief who, if you've noticed, if you've been downtown or on Victory Road there, he has been cleaning up the homeless. They were so responsive. They was on a texting basis. There's more tents again, and they have a zero tolerance policy because they don't want people to just hang out and develop their community like that in on our properties. But that being said, I think that there's really good people that are gathering to try to get what is our plan. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, thank you.
Before we go to Ken, I want to piggyback on this same topic and address what you mentioned, Senator Wyler, that there is a lot of opposition to the policy perspective for the homeless shelter, and to just really clarify that. And I know that you likely know because you are in those behind-the-scenes discussions, but there is no expert in homelessness that will tell you that a macro shelter is effective, either as an intervention strategy or as a cost-saving strategy. They are more expensive and they have fewer results. And we know this. Like in the operational world, we know this. So it just baffles me that this homeless committee has made this decision to move forward with the proposed macro shelter. Micro shelters have demonstrated success in our city, in our state, and then across the country. And I think micro shelters are the way to go. A micro shelter would be something that could be added to the other legislation that the legislature has already passed, requiring different cities to have, or counties, to have locations, have blue code places. Like there is a history of requiring smaller municipalities and counties to provide some of the services for homeless. And I think that that's a great strategy moving forward. Instead of destroying one neighborhood or one area, spreading that out across. Because the policy-focused decision is nobody. Nobody would say this is the right decision as far as effectiveness. Okay, so then my plea, last thing, is as you sit on this committee representing the leadership in the Senate, I just ask that you remember you also represent North Salt Lake. You of also course, represent yeah. that neighborhood on 2200 West. And I know that you are very empathetic towards the impact that it would have on our city as well as that neighborhood. And so in your efforts to be a good problem solver, please represent us first and represent Senate leadership second so that we are represented by you and how lucky for us potentially to have you be the one that is then advocating rather than another senator who doesn't have that.
And just to be clear, I'm more of a liaison, so there's a channel of communication, but I appreciate
thank you.
Your
well,
concerns.
Just please keep championing our position, which is that this is not the right way to do it. Thank
and
you.
I'll just comment your comment about the micro shelter. If you talk to the Salt Lake Police Chief, he's like, why is it fair for the entire state to bring everybody to Salt Lake at this location who is homeless? All the other counties should be bearing the brunt of their own homeless, not bussing them into this location. So I think that's definitely his voice is being heard with that too.
And he's on
one of the experts that
same
knows how
committee
it really
I'm
works.
On. So.
I just wanted to quickly first express my thanks to both of you for representing North Salt Lake so well during the session, and I say this in front of the City Council. You guys are super responsive when I reach out to you and others reach out to you, and we're appreciative.
We're responsive to you. If the mayor texts us, we don't text him back.
So. I know you're more responsive to the mayor, as you should be, but I appreciate that very much. I think my concern is a general concern, and I have this concern during every legislative session, and that is there's a narrative that's sometimes anti-municipality, and there's stories about municipalities that are anti-housing affordability. That is not the case in North Salt Lake, and I don't think it's the case in Davis County or Salt Lake County. I think all of our municipalities are working hard to think of ways to provide more affordable housing units. We've approved two projects that haven't been funded yet and can't find funding right now. So we are pro affordable housing, creating more units. And I just wanted to make sure you understood that. I think sometimes it's alarming to us as cities to have bills that dictate zoning and lot sizes and details of development that might create neighborhoods that no one wants to live in, including people who have a hard time buying their first house. And sometimes those strategies, though well-meaning, don't always result in the best neighborhoods. And so,
and I just want to remind you, I don't know if all seven of you always agree on everything. I'm guessing that's a no. But times that by 13.5, and that's the legislature, because if Melissa and I were in charge of everything, I don't think you would feel like the legislature is anti-city, but we don't have any control over what our 102 colleagues, what bills they run or what they say. But I've always said, and this is not a slam to Melissa, I think the best legislators are former city council people, and I'm a little biased in saying that. I'm not perfect, but I've always tried to be respectful to my roots as a city council person.
Thank you. And if I said the legislature is anti-municipality, that wasn't my intention.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's the narrative, and it trickles down to us. And I'm always sad when a story gets told that I know to be a little bit different than what we see on the ground.
Yeah.
From all the
cities. And I think the league does a great job representing the cities collectively up there. And I will say this, council member, if I can, there have been some bad actors out there, and every once in a while I think a city does need to be slapped down. That's not North Salt Lake, but every once in a while there's a good cause for it. But in any event, it is what it is. So.
Well, thank you both for coming, and thank you for your service to our community and to South Davis County.
Thank you. Thanks for all you do, and congratulations on your election results. So,
thank you, Mark.
If you're wondering, Melissa filed for re-election this week, and I don't have to because I've got another 2 years on my term. So, anyway.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I just want to echo some of the comment of the League of Cities and Towns, Wasatch Front Regional Council, are very responsive to legislation that's there. Some colleagues don't bring them into the conversations, and some do a lot of that. So I know I try to do that in all of my legislation, but it is a privilege to live in North Salt Lake. It's run well, we have great neighbors, we have great activities, we have a culture here that people want to be here. And so we have a lot of opportunities to go north and south to play or just in the backyard. And so I just want to say thank you for your work, for this city to be well run and have some of the most spectacular fireworks all around. So thank you.
Tell them about our town hall in 2 weeks.
We have a town hall at the Bountiful City Hall on Saturday morning, January 20.
2 weeks from Saturday.
2 weeks from Saturday. I'm just going to double check the date. And that's the 24th. That's the Saturday after our session has just begun. We do every Saturday morning. We do an online chat that we put on Facebook. You can put questions in the comments that we address. But it's nice for us to do periodically when we can some in person. So you're welcome to come, ask questions, bring up issues that are important to you. You'll have me, you'll have Senator Wyler, and also Representative Ray Ward, because he represents Bountiful, and I also represent part of Bountiful, and you do as well.
Yes.
So I think it's a good mix.
And
to
usually
be able
Paul
to,
Cutler
to
from
meet.
Centerville. So.
Yeah, and Paul Cutler comes as well.
And for those of you listening to my voice, if you want to watch our weekly town halls on Facebook, you need to join the South Davis Community Facebook group. And the nice thing is if you miss it, like you're skiing or something, it's there. You know, you can go back the next day or the next week and watch it if you're a nerd and you don't have anything else to do with your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is the council okay if we just keep going rather than take a break here? All right. Wendy, are you okay with that? Yeah. Yeah. Correct, yes. Okay.